Today on Straight Talk Africa, a look at the new leadership for the African Union and the significance of the admission of the Kingdom of Morocco as the 55th member country of the continental bloc, the African Union. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, we discuss the significance of the 28th session of the African Union Summit held in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, you, our audience, has weighed in on our topic through emails and Facebook comments. And we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
The African Union Summit ended Tuesday with leaders making two key decisions. Our colleague Paul Ndiho has more on the story.
The African Union on Monday elected Chadian Foreign Minister Moussa Faki Mahamat as its new commission chairperson. In the final round of voting, he beat out Kenya's top diplomat Amina Mohamed. The 56-year-old Faki takes over from South Africa's Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma, who remained in the post an extra 6 months after leaders failed to agree on a candidate last July. The theme of this year's meeting was harnessing the demographic dividend through investment in the youth. AU members also discussed the divisive issue of Africa's relationship to the International Criminal Court and the readmission of Morocco. Dlamini Zuma, who now is widely believed to be in the running for the president of the African National Congress, also spoke out against the new travel ban by U.S. President Donald J. Trump, barring travelers from 7 Muslim-majority countries, including the African nations of Libya, Sudan, and Somalia.
The very country to whom our people were taken as slaves during the transatlantic slave trade have now decided to ban refugees from some of our countries. What do we do about this? Indeed, this is one of the greatest challenges and tests to our unity and solidarity.
The new UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres spoke at the summit and commended African countries for opening up their borders to refugees and people fleeing violence, while nations in other parts of the world, including the West, are closing their borders and making plans to build walls.
African nations are also among the world's largest and most generous hosts of refugees. African borders remain open for those in need of protection when so many borders are being closed, even in the most developed countries in the world.
Sub-Saharan Africa hosts more than 18 million refugees, about 26% of the world's refugees. According to the UN Refugee Agency, the refugees have fled conflicts in Somalia, Central African Republic, Nigeria, South Sudan, and Burundi. The world's largest refugee camp is in the Dadaab facility in Kenya, which houses more than 300,000 people, mostly from neighboring Somalia. However, last year, the Kenyan government announced its intentions to close Dadaab, which has been open for more than 20 years. Kenyan officials say the camp harbors Islamic extremists and is a security threat. In another related development, Guinea's president Alpha Conde has succeeded Chad's president Idris Debe as the chairman of the African Union. Meanwhile, the African Union formally admitted Morocco as a member on Tuesday, more than 3 decades after Rabat withdrew from the predecessor organization. The North African Kingdom quit the AU's predecessor, the Organization of African Unity, 3 decades ago amid a dispute about the body's recognition of Western Sahara, most of which has been controlled by Morocco since 1976. Paul Ndiho, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that report. For more reaction to the summit, we are joined by VOA Southern correspondent, Israel Southern Africa correspondent from Addis Ababa. Good evening, Powell. Anita Powell.
Hi, Shaka. Thank you so much.
You're most welcome. What is the mood like in Addis Ababa, where you are?
Well, I want to be clear, the summit ended on Tuesday, it's now Wednesday, so I think there's a sense of relief that many of the issues that were maybe troubling the AU, that have been kind of a thorn in the AU side, have finally been sorted. And I'm talking about the election of new AU Commission chairperson, that's Moussa Faki Mohammed of Chad. Also, a little bit more clarity on the AU's position on the International Criminal Court. And finally, a decision on whether to admit Morocco into the AU, which, of course, they did.
Are you suggesting perhaps that those are some of the factors that may have led to the loss of two key favorite losers here? I am talking about Abdoulaye Bazir of Senegal and Amina Mohamed of Kenya.
So I'm going to politely disagree with you, Shaka, about the fact that these two were the favorites. In the run-up to this summit, I interviewed a number of very close, very qualified AU watchers, and I asked every single one of them, who's going to win this election? And every single one of them gave me an excellent, excellent argument and a completely different answer. Because the reality is, this is a secret vote. And this vote is not solely about the AU chairperson. This is about the AU chairperson and the eight people on the AU commission. And those are the, for lack of a better word, they're sort of ministers. They have portfolios. They're chairpeople of different portfolios. And so there is, understandably, a lot of horse trading. There's an informal rotation between regions. There is a lot of push and pull between different language groups, with the Francophone group being very, very, some would say, dominant in the AU and in the Anglophone group. And so we have a chairperson who was a woman, who is from Southern Africa, and who is Anglophone. And so, you know, in a very strange way, Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma may have ruled out those three factors in choosing the next AU chairperson. But I just want to be clear, I don't think that there really were favorites in the way that we think there were. I think it was all about what happened in that room between the heads of state about populating nine seats, not one seat, nine seats, and there was going to be a good amount of horse trading.
Talking about Dramani Zuma having come from an Anglophone bloc, what about the fact that the previous three chairpersons have in fact come from the Francophone bloc? We're talking about, of course, Jean-Pierre Ping, mm-hmm. We're talking about Omar Alpha Konari, and I think Emery Saleh from Ivory Coast.
So I guess you're arguing against the idea that we would have another French speaker in the post. That's fair. But Dlamini Zuma was a slightly, I think, unconventional choice 4 years ago. She had to fight to get that position, so perhaps the AU leadership felt it was time to return to the status quo. But as I said, the most important thing to remember is that this is a secret vote between heads of state. And as much as I was able to stand outside of the hall and try to pester them before, after, during the vote, to find out what was going through their mind, what their motivations were, ultimately me and a lot of other journalists were unsuccessful. We'll never really know, is my point.
Anita, what about the fact that the chairman of the African Union until Tuesday yesterday was Chadian President Idriss Deby? To what extent would that in fact have proved to be a factor in order for his former foreign minister to be the winner?
That's a very astute observation, Shaka, and it hasn't escaped many people at the African Union, both people inside the organization and outside, that the rotating chairperson of the African Union has effectively handed off power to the chairperson of the African Union Commission, who is, you know, in some ways the real meat, the real executor of the AU's policies. It is interesting, but Chad has great status with the African Union, and so does, as you know, Idriss Deby, the president of Chad, who's been in power for a very long time. It is definitely an interesting transition, but I guess it's also possible that the rotating chairmanship of the AU and the rotating chairmanship of the AU Commission occasionally do coincide in terms of region, because there are five regions that they rotate amongst. Those are the five regions of Africa, which is North Africa, West Africa, Central Africa, Southern Africa, and East Africa. And perhaps the stars just aligned a certain way this time. But that might be a bit naive. It is definitely interesting, I would just say, that we have a continuous leadership from Chadian leaders.
What about the foreign factor? There are people who are saying that when you look at the African Union, 70% of its budget is from foreign donors, actually. And when you look at that beautiful $2 million building, it was in fact
built
$200 million dollars. It was built in fact by the Chinese. As you talk to some people, do you get the sense that there might in fact have been some kind of foreign influence as to which candidate at the end of the day won the day?
So that's a very interesting question. I think actually that was the unofficial sort of undercurrent of this summit. The idea that, and I think we saw that when the AU admitted Morocco, that the AU feels very strongly that Africa needs to be united sort of against the world. That's why we now have a completely united African Union. I actually don't know how much the foreign influence will play a role in the future, because I think one of the main concerns of the summit, the unspoken or should I say whispered in the corridors concern, was about recent isolation among Western nations, and I'm referring, of course, to the United States. There were a lot of whispered and there was a lot of concern in the hallways about recent announcements by U.S. leadership that they weren't going to let in immigrants from certain African countries, from certain Muslim-majority countries. And there was definitely the sense that Africa now needs to stick together against the world rather than the other way around. And I think there is proof that that the African Union feels this, because they have recently resolved to overhaul their funding mechanism and try to fund themselves rather than relying as much on foreign donors. And I think we are seeing maybe a small shift.
Anita, you've been around for a couple of days. What is your assessment of the summit?
Wow, that's a really deep question, Shaka. There's a very, very strong divide between what you see inside that $200 million building in Addis Ababa and then what you see when you walk 5 meters out of that building. There seems to be a great disconnect between the powerful in Africa and the powerless, who you can literally find right outside the African Union. You can find Ethiopians who are struggling on tiny salaries. I spoke to a doctor today, a pediatric surgeon, who says the average doctor's salary in Ethiopia is $300 a month. I don't know how he survives. I don't know how he pays his rent. I don't know how he cares for his family on that. Yet inside the summit, you have these leaders who are very well cared for, who are significantly older than their population, and who make all of their decisions behind closed doors. So the sentiment from the summit is there's a huge disconnect between the power on this continent and the people.
Very interesting. Thank you very, very much, Anita Powell, for your analysis. Now we'll pause for a short break, and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOAAUSummit. And we are still on Facebook, just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please, don't go away.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests, David K. Gacheru, Kenyan Deputy Chief of Mission to the United States, and Ambassador Sidi Sane, former Gambian Foreign Minister. Well, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka. Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome, David. We have to point out, by the way, that we expected to host the Kenyan Speaker of the National Assembly, Justin Muturi, but due to circumstances beyond his control, he could not show up.
I sincerely apologize for that.
And thank you very much for coming.
Okay.
It's a pleasure, of course, always having you on the show.
Well, thank you, Shaka, for having me again on the show.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the U.S. country code is 1. First of all, let me come to you immediately, David. Frankly, I think that political condolences are in order, because the last time I checked, almost every Kenyan, really, was simply waiting to, hey, take some kind of champagne, really, because the top job on the African continent, it seems to me, or at least from the people I have talked from your country, was basically for Ambassador Amina Mohamed to lose.
Her Excellency, Dr. Amina Mohamed.
Yes.
The voting was done, over 27 rounds of the voting, and His Excellency Makama from Chad was elected. This is an example of Pan-Africanism. Integration coming up in line. This is the agenda which was Her Excellency Amina was running on, and it is a democratic process, and the results were that Makama won the elections. Her Excellency Dr. Amina Mohamed ran a very valiant campaign. She did a very good. She ran on a Pan-African agenda, and we supported her. And we're going to support the new chairman of the as a Pan-African. And in the spirit of continuation of that Pan-African process, Kenya will support the new chairman, and we'll work with them to promote the Pan-African agenda for Africa. Her Excellency, Dr. Amina Mohamed, brought in a lot of Pan-Africanism in the campaign. And I think that is a legacy that will persist beyond the election of the new chairman of Africa.
The Kenyan government lobbied extremely hard, and really, did not leave almost anything to chance.
Yeah.
Everybody, at least in Kenya, seemed to have thought that at the end of the day, it would really be Ambassador Dr. Amina Mohamed. What happened? What really happened?
I won't be able in a position to speculate of what happened, but it's a democratic process of elections. And Anita Powell articulated very well the intrigue is in there between Francophone and French Africa, but that's not for here and I now. This is just a post-mortem. But I think as we say, it is a democratic process. Her Excellency had promoted Pan-Africanism integration for Africa. And that's a legacy that will continue. And that is something that can continue with a new chairman. So we support the election of, when we work with Kenya government, we work with a new chairman. And we continue promoting the same legacy that our ambassador ran, ran on a very strong Pan-African integration agenda, which we think will live beyond the consequence of election. We honestly were disappointed. It's our wish that she would have been elected. I think we feel she ran a wonderful campaign, and she was extremely qualified for that position. and her skills were very good and very appropriate for African Union.
I'm glad that you talk about how disappointed you were, despite, of course, what happened having really been a sort of political and democratic process. What is it like, what is the feeling really in the Kenyan camp and especially at home? Because when I read the Kenyan papers, I look at some of the television stations and stuff like that, they can't believe it.
Yeah, they can't believe it. It's an election process that is done by the African presidents, and as Anita Poya put it together, there are intricacies in between it, and that's what it is. It's a democratic process.
Ambassador Sidi Sani, what about you? Were you surprised?
Yes, I was surprised.
Why?
Because I was one of those who really felt that the Kenyan candidate stood a very good chance.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have
arguably one of the most beautiful diplomats. Really.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And I also had my own favorite in the racehorse.
And who was that?
In the
Your
horse
neighbor?
Race, rather. My neighbor.
Your and, neighbor.
And my friend, Abdullah Bachili, that
yes.
I thought, up to perhaps maybe last year, December, I think he was a clear favorite.
No, you're right, after Kigali.
Yes.
After the summit, the failed summit in the Rwandan capital, Kigali.
Yes.
I was also told, frankly, by some very impeccable sources, including some individuals, in fact, who had the right and the privilege to vote on that. They were talking about Abdoulaye Bathily from Senegal.
Yes. And if you recall, in Kigali, that was when King Mohammed of Morocco, submitted his letter suggesting that they would like to come back into the fold.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing the relations between Senegal and Morocco, it was very, very strong. So this was also another signal, in my view, that gave Bachelet a very good shot at it at that point.
But what about now reports suggesting that perhaps, in fact, it could, in fact, have been due to that very close relationship between Senegal and Morocco that may, in fact, have undermined the candidacy of Abdoulaye Bathily?
Yeah, but, you know, this is politics.
Because Polisario, of course, which is advocating for the self-determination of Western Sahara, is also a member of the African Union and was seriously lobbying against whatever Morocco stood for.
Yeah, this could be the case. But as I said, there are a lot of, you know, the dynamics of the whole election process. It's extremely difficult, really, to pinpoint one, especially after the first and second ballot.
Mm-hmm.
The first ballot is a pretty good indication of where individual states stand as far as a candidate is concerned.
Right.
But after you go past the first ballot,
right,
then you start having this horse trading in which other issues come into play. So it's very difficult at that point, especially now you're talking about the sixth ballot or the seventh
ballot. The seventh, as a matter of fact.
I mean, then anything goes at that point. You may see the least favorite person can end up coming on top at the end of it. So really there are many factors at play after the first and second ballots.
Well, what about the victorious candidate, Moussa Faki Mahamat? What do you know about him?
Well, I know very little about him, except the fact that he has been with Idriss Deby for a while. He is known to have a very steady hand. He is
a safe
pair of hands.
Translation?
Means that he will not rock the boat.
Mariable.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it would be, it can also be a very good compromise candidate, you know, in this particular instance. This much I know about him. But then, given what has transpired in the election of Dlamini Zuma from South Africa, which was beyond the normal convention, in the sense that in the African Union, as well as in the African Development Bank, for instance,
mm-hmm. Where you worked for some years?
Yes, I worked there for 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's normally these heads of these institutions go to smaller countries. They don't go to the big five, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
That is Egypt, and South Africa and the like.
Nigeria.
Mm-hmm. But they have
Algeria.
They have broken convention this year at the African Development Bank by coming over the Nigerian president.
Correct.
Which is rather unusual because they have always been guaranteed a vice presidential position at the bank.
But I have to say that the current president of the ADB, who I have had the honor and privilege of interacting with, is a uniquely qualified individual.
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, the idea is not about the qualification. The fear is they are already very powerful economically,
uh-huh.
very powerful politically,
mm-hmm.
and diplomatically. And if you add on top of that,
mm-hmm.
the head of the institution, then, you know, smaller states shy away from that.
So basically, you are talking about, for example, the United Nations.
Yes.
The members, the permanent members that form the Security Council,
mm-hmm.
the five permanent members, it would be very, very unusual if, for example, you had the Secretary General of the United Nations coming from one of those
that's
permanent
right. that's
five.
Exactly that's exactly the case. And it was broken in the case of South Africa, and as your reporter in Addis Ababa have just said,
mm-hmm.
that they are probably now is a course correction going back to the tradition of having smaller countries taking charge, you know, as opposed to having an Egyptian run the African Union or South African running the Union.
Even though, in fairness to Dramani Zuma, she happens to have the distinction of having been the first Anglophone or English-speaking candidate, frankly, to have occupied that position since the, since the beginning, in fact, of the African Union in 2002.
Yeah. I'm not taking anything away from her, really, to be quite honest with you, but I just, it is more in terms of the size of the country as opposed to the candidate himself or herself in this particular instance.
I'm sure you have heard about reports that there is a possibility that Mrs. Dramani Zuma is likely to be running for the presidency of her country. If true, could it be that whoever supported her 4 years ago basically provided her really with a stage where she could prove herself to be perhaps the next commander-in-chief of the armed forces of South Africa?
Well, it is very possible. I don't know really that much about South African politics at this stage, but certainly she certainly stands a chance of being the commander-in-chief of the South African army. There's no doubt about it.
Were you disappointed by the fact that your candidate didn't win?
Well, of course. I mean, any time that your candidate loses, you are disappointed, of course. You know, but again, we will all throw our support to the current chairperson of the AU Commission. And we do hope that we will be able to move forward to look at certain issues within the African Union. I have been particularly concerned about the role of the strong men in the union. This is why I am a great supporter of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, that have been doing quite a marvelous job, in my view, of trying to have introducing term limits
mm-hmm.
for our presidents in that region. Now that Jammeh is out in the Gambia, we are left with only one state, and that is Togo, that was opposed to this idea. Hopefully now, with Adama Barrow in charge in the Gambia, that we will be able to at least push the ECOWAS to introduce the resolution again, so that at least as far as the 15 member states of ECOWAS are concerned, we will have term limits within that region.
Interesting. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Ayen Bior. Take it away, Ayen.
Thanks, Shaka. And still to come, we'll reveal some of the fantastic feedback we received from you, our audience, through social media. We'll be right back.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidhi-Uwat, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Ayen. Take it away again, Ayen.
Well, thanks again, Shaka. We received tremendous feedback in our STA inbox to this week's question. The African Union leaders selected a new leader, but among the key issues being discussed at the 28th African Union Summit, Africa's relationship to the International Criminal Court, and Morocco's readmission to the African Union. This leads us to our question of the week, which asks, what should the African Union set as a top priority for the continent in 2017? Well, starting off the conversation is Vershima from Nigeria with our letter of the week. Our letter of the week is from Vershima Biam in Nigeria, who writes, the African Union should develop and promote independent political systems, void of any foreign dependence. It should also initiate a technological-based economy through local coordination of its resources. Finally, political and leadership issues should be clearly tackled through structured democratic settings and a formulation of policies that are attainable. Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platform to communicate with us. And a reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOAAUSummit. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of, let's go to a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele, who tweets, this year, Africa should utilize its resources to boost its economies. We have another tweet from Prince Habat Nkula. He says an exit plan to all longtime African rulers such that Africa can have democratic, free, and fair elections, not selection. And our last tweet is from Upano Godfrey. He says, make rule of law a priority for African rulers as a must to follow. Practice or face the force like that of ECOWAS. Now to a comment from Facebook fan Kasika Kasika from Dodoma, Tanzania, who writes, the AU should prioritize economic issues, especially the free flow of trade among countries to boost trade across the continent, instead of depending on trade with developed countries, which is not mutual. Well, Shaka, very interesting. What do you have to say?
What about you, David, your reaction to what we just had?
I concur. Inter-Africa trade right now lies below 10%, intra-Africa trade. Mm-hmm. If we just push up to about 15%, we really don't need at all foreign intervention. And this is a function of infrastructure in intra-African countries. And as our Excellency CS Amina was running on Pan-African integration, those were the goals behind that by 2030, we'll have almost 65% of the world workforce. And how we manage our youth in the next 30 years is a function of how countries will be stable and economically stable and how many are youth. And the best way to do that is to become economically dependent and create economic region and economic blocks and have inter-Africa improve as much infrastructure inter-Africa. And that means increased inter-African trade. And inter-African trade came to economic where we have employment for our youth. Mm-hmm. We will have to very well know how to manage them in the next 30 years to come.
How do you accomplish that, especially given the current ways in which people are not free, really, to move from one country to the other, with exception, perhaps, in fact, of ECOWAS, really?
Yes, I think ECOWAS is experiencing the same problem, that is free flow of goods and people across state lines. It is extremely difficult to do custom duties and custom, administrative formats are different in all of these states, even though there is, you know, protocols the governing all of these. But in terms of implementation, it's a problem. I would like to also say that one way of going about it, I think, has to do with designing projects, particularly infrastructural projects. ECOWAS is doing something in that area, particularly in energy sector, where they encourage multinational projects as opposed to standalone local projects or national projects.
Why?
Because that way, if you have cross-border projects that, for instance, Senegal and the Gambia will jointly finance, then it improves the integration of their economies across the state lines.
I see.
So this is what, in fact, while I was at the African Development Bank, we changed the rules to encourage countries, rather than focusing on individual projects for national development, we encourage them to propose multinational projects that goes across lines, state lines. That way you can integrate your economies and the infrastructure far quicker than you would independent, freestanding projects, national projects.
I see.
Yes.
Ayend, we have more reaction from the social media world.
Yes, in fact, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Simon Ojour, who writes, I think the African Union should prioritize good governance, which is a product of a democracy. Without that, we will still have presidents such as Uganda's Yoweri Museveni saying that he is not a servant of the people. Is the AU being insensitive to that extent? Maybe because I believe most of these AU folks are themselves despots. And our last Facebook comment comes from Bulwana Thomas, who writes, I think the African Union should set laws to stop some African leaders who rob government money from their nations to invest in developed countries outside Africa. Well, Shaka, certainly no shortage of opinion here. What's your thoughts?
Very interesting, especially that aspect of leaders or rulers who rob money or who steal their countries. What about a man from Gambia? What can you tell us about that, especially in light of the fact that your former president for 22 years, Yahya Jammeh, reportedly left the country with a fleet of luxurious automobiles and $11.5 million to boot?
Well, this is why I am in full support of ECOWAS's efforts in limiting the terms of these so-called strongmen and dictators. This is one way of doing it, to limit their terms. If you have someone who is in power for 22 years, 30 years, 38 years, 40 years, there is no chance to avoid this type of problems facing us. That is milking the public treasury at the expense of the ordinary people.
But what about some who will say, wait a minute, it can't really be the issue of term limits. It must be something to do with either performance or lack of it. Because the last time I checked, Singapore, even though it had what you would call a parliamentary democracy, and therefore would have, in fact, a prime minister, who would be, of course, chosen from among a party or parties that would win the election, they had a man called Lee Kuan Yew for 31 years. He developed that island or city nation from a third world country to a first world country. So is it really the issue of term limits or is it about performance really?
Well, it's a combination of, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I think it's a combination of both. I just cited the term limits as one aspect of it. Now, if you take, for instance, a guy like Yahya Jammeh, who came into power at 29 years old, without a wife, without a...
He has since been able to marry.
Yes. without not being able, not having any experience of managing even a household budget, much more a national treasury, then, I mean, you are inviting trouble. So I think there are a lot of factors that go into it, apart from this. The character of the individual as well takes, is also very important.
What about the issue of good governance? In fact, the issue of democracy, really, talking about a situation, frankly, where citizens owe their allegiance to the state, and therefore they do, in fact, have what you would call inalienable rights, birthrights, really.
I think, this personal opinion is, everybody has to be a stakeholder of the environment they are in. If you become a stakeholder of the environment you're in, you become accountable for the environment you're in. Our population, most of the population, are not informed of their rights. So whenever they are coming to vote, they vote the same people who were there before. Why is that happening? I think part of it is that what you say, there's an element of political and economic empowerment to the people. People have to be politically empowered to have the knowledge to select the right leader for their country. They had to be empowered to be a stakeholder at the local level. So from the local level upward, it has to be political influence from the bottom, top down, where the leader of our country is politically mature and politically democratic, and that can trickle down. It also to bottom up.
You want to
from the stakeholder, from grassroots, where people is a stakeholder from the your community you live in, to make sure that everybody is accountable where you are.
They should feel like they're invested in decisions that are made which affect them.
Exactly.
Correct. Well, thank you very much, Ayen, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that does it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate with us. Please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the northern Nigeria-based terrorist group Boko Haram. The militant group has targeted both the Muslims and Christians, killing more than 20,000 people since 2009. VOA has exclusively obtained secret video shot by Boko Haram that identifies its operatives committing acts of terror. We'll discuss the violent organization on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. Our discussion today is about the significance of the 28th session of the African Union Summit held in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. And our distinguished guests are David K. Gacheru, Kenyan Deputy Chief of Mission to the United States, and Ambassador Sidi Sane, former Gambian Foreign Minister. Gentlemen, again, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa. You're most welcome. You know, it's very interesting that we're talking about the issues of citizenship here, and I think we talk about it rightly so, because frankly, the majority of our people on the continent either are treated or they themselves behave, in fact, as if they were subjects, not citizens. The difference being that whereas citizens have rights, subjects do not have rights, they have privileges, since they owe their allegiance to an individual authority, who could be a kabaka, a king, an emperor, or a presidential monarch, a dictator, whatever, who at the end of the day, when he or she feels nice about somebody, grants them with privileges, but they have absolutely no rights. How do we somehow make people become very aware of what their rights are, and how perhaps they can make a difference, really, if they could, in fact, assert their, you know, their birthright, so to speak? Because let's face it, as you said earlier,
all of us should really feel that we have equal shares in our society. And yet you have a situation where very few people, perhaps less than a percentage point, really are in control of everything, really, including perhaps the oxygen that people breathe.
I think one item that that I think is helpful, and we saw it in Kenya, we have a devolved government. We have a new constitution that empowers people locally, where you find you have devolved the government to the local level, where the people themselves become stakeholders in the beginning, and they run the affairs of their county. So we have 47 counties in Kenya, and in between there, there are other local governments that run that.
Yes.
And at that local level, you have people who are running the affairs of the local level. So the government pushed the budget to the local county, and the local county, locally from the bottom up, start deciding what is important for their region. And I think economic empowerment bring about, even there are three things in life that you need: food, shelter, and housing. Mm-hmm. If you don't have those basic things, and you
food, shelter,
food, shelter,
food,
and clothing,
shelter,
and clothing, education,
healthcare,
and all the care, those basic things that are there, that everybody is every day struggling to make those three items at the end of the day.
How is the experiment of devolution panning out? Because there are some critics, frankly, who have been saying that the central government in Nairobi is not particularly committed to that, really, and it doesn't, frankly, deliver when it comes to the real money.
I tend to disagree with that. It's only the first, the second, the third year we're doing it right now.
Correct.
And considering the size of all seven countries, most institutions didn't believe that Kenya would be able to run it the way it has gone. Some of it is political, shivering around, but the government has done a perfect job of supplying under the government. So a lot of it's a new process, and it's for the country's the first time, and they're doing it very well at this point.
Terrific.
Yeah.
Terrific. Okay. Now, Ambassador, what about the role of the African Union? I mean, we've been talking about the African Union, but frankly, as I travel across the continent, I meet very few people, frankly, who are even aware of the institution's existence.
This is a problem, which is why, personally, I focus more of my attention really to ECOWAS than
because
I would to the African
the regional
Union.
Bloc.
Yes, yes, because I think it is a building block. And if we do succeed at that level, then there is a likelihood that the African Union will succeed, provided, of course, that we have the other regional organizations like the East African, and the SADC and all these others. This is where I believe, personally, that this is where we have to start. Which takes me to what the deputy head of mission have just said with regards to the Kenyan program of trying to empower Kenyans. We have tried in the Gambia to do that in the 60s and early 70s, in what we call the devolution of provincial administration.
And as Daud Jawara.
Yes, and you have made that point that it is always the central government that is reluctant in Banjul, in Nairobi, to devolve that to the local level.
Right.
So, in the case of Kenya, since he said that it is something that is will be successful, we will keep an eye on this because this is very important. If you can devolve those responsibilities to the local level, strengthening local government administration, including revenue collection mechanisms, revenue collection enhancement mechanisms. I think that we will be moving in that direction of empowering local people. Because as it stands now, there is a huge disconnect between the rule and the rulers.
Well, yeah. Unfortunately, duty calls, I'm told to get out of Washington and take the show to the real people on the African continent via the telephone callers. Good evening, Patrick from Nigeria. You are most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Mr. Shaka. Good evening, our guests in the studio. My name is Patrick Okafor here in Arjuku, Nigeria. Sir, the ambassador, Your Excellency, sir, I want to find out from you, sir. African Union moved from that word OAU, the African Union. And I look at the mission when they entered, when they say the word African Union, that they will work a mission that will embrace and serve the continent. But today, what we see in under the African Union, the African leaders sit down in the office, they refuse to go. Sir, the ambassador, sir, why is it so? Now, you looking at the African continent, you have seen that diseases, poverty are ravaging the continent, and our African leaders insist on sitting down in the office. Is that one of the objectives of the African Union? Thank you, Mr. Shaka.
Thank you very much. Just hold it. Let me go to Uganda. Good evening, Samuel. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good evening, Shaka. How are you, brother?
Terrific. How are you today?
Kampala, Uganda is terrific, though cold this evening. Now, I'm called Richard Nyambiri Maro. Shaka, for sure, while I was growing out, while I was growing up, we used to hear of, we used to study about the Organization of African Union, which was formed up by Kwame Nkrumah, Dr. Milton Obote here, our very own Julius Nyerere, and so on. But the Organization of African Union, its sole objective was to unite the continent of Africa. Eventually, it was changed into African Union, which happens to be a dictator's club now. Only dictators have a say in the AU. The AU has never come to rescue the down African, I mean the common African. It's only hailing dictators. Imagine a whole country like Uganda threatening to walk out of the ICC, and the AU keeps silent just because they want to give shadow to the dictators. Imagine people have been killed in several countries. The AU has remained silent, and just a major regional bloc like ECOWAS doing something to rescue the people of Gambia. I think AU is just a dictator's club, mm-hmm. which we shouldn't even bother of. Yeah.
I'm afraid, somewhere, I think your point is really well made. I think we have to go move through the traffic to someone else from the other part of the continent. Thank you very much. Good evening, Tafa from Ghana. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Hello, good evening, Shaka.
I am terrific. How are you today, Tafa?
I'm great, Shaka.
Mm-hmm.
Shaka, my question to our guest is that yesterday, listening to European Union president, one of the comments he passed that one of the threats Europe is facing today is a new American administration. Now, our African Union has just ended a summit. And lucky we are three of our countries as in the Donald Trump banned list. Now, we didn't have any communique from our leaders whether the opposition on Donald Trump's decision. What is their position? We want to know, because this decision affected the citizens of Africa.
Why don't you, Tafa, why don't you, look, you live downtown Accra. Why don't you pick a phone and call the Ghanaian president, Nana Akufo-Addo, or write through the daily newspapers, the letter to the editor, one open letter to the president, and find out what he thinks.
Hello, Shaka, it's not easy. It's not easy to do that. Shaka, I am not saying that a criminal should be allowed to enter into America. No, I will never support that. But this decision that the American president took, we wanted to hear our leaders. Because
thank you.
This decision can affect ordinary people.
Thank
so this
you.
Is what we wanted to hear their view. Like the Europeans now, we had the views of Europeans. So we wanted to hear the views of our leaders also in Africa. So my question to our guests in the studio, how do they think about the decision the American president took? I want them to hear their opinion.
Very interesting. But I'm sure that if you watch the program from the beginning, you will have realized, for example, that there was a very, very strong voice from the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa, during the African Union summit. Didn't you hear?
Hello, Shaka.
I said if you watch the program from the top, you will realize that that voice came out of the African summit in Addis Ababa
through the automobile.
Sorry, Shaka. I was outside Accra.
I see.
I just drove into Accra right now, able to catch you.
I'm sorry.
I was outside Accra. I didn't catch the first time of the program.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Very interesting points here. Yeah. One of them, of course, frankly, how can the African Union make itself more relevant, really, to the ordinary African citizen, really, rather than perhaps being a club, as it were, of the guys on top? And then the issue, of course, of the new administration in Washington, and in terms of course, how it interacts with the rest of the world, including Africa.
I think initially, as I said before, I think that what one of the best outcomes that from the African Union is economic dependence, where every AU member budget 75% of their operations.
Mm.
When they do that,
they don't.
But now,
of them do
but
not.
Think,
in fact,
I think they resolve to work on that.
They are trying, but they are talking the talk, and they in fact walk that talk.
So, to me, when they become a stakeholder in that environment where they are contributing, then they become more part of it. Right now, they own it. So whatever you contribute, become ownership of that.
Mm.
That is one. The other thing, the first gentleman who asked about the political trickle down. I talked about the leadership has to be top bottom up. So if the president is not powerful and is not politically conscious of governance, that does not trickle down. So that's we need presidents or governments who can lead and power people bottom down.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Ambassador Sani?
Well, I think the citizens themselves would also have to come in.
Through what? Civic society?
Civic society. Mm-hmm. I think, for instance, if you take the case of the Gambia, after 22 years of a very terrible dictatorship, I think people have become much more aware now. And they are taking already the new administration to task.
Mm-hmm. You have 30 seconds.
Yes, to task. And I think that this is something that must be encouraged, and also the use of social media to really apply additional pressure
and
on
of course,
these leaders.
And of course the changing demographics which are not invested in the status quo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Well, gentlemen, on that note, thanks to our two distinguished guests, David K. Gacheru, Kenyan Deputy Chief of Mission to the United States, and Ambassador Sidi Sane, former Gambian Foreign Minister. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next, and tomorrow morning is Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.